UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There's 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There's 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we thought?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there. Taking airplanes.
And it is dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Alright, Bob, take a look. Alright, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show. How are you all doing? I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. We start off tonight with Diana in London. Back in the 1960s, while driving early one morning along a country road in Cornwall, she witnessed a dark, oval-shaped object emerging from a wooded area and fly across the road about 50 feet in front of her car, flying below telegraph wires and dropping behind a stone wall into a valley and out of sight. Then we hear from G-Man in Arizona about an early abduction in his childhood and a visit from the FBI after sending a letter to the late John F. Kennedy. Diana is up next.
But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to patreon.com/UFO Chronicles podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show.
Hello, Diana. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Nick.
It is lovely to have you with us today, and you're calling from London in the UK.
Yes, I am indeed.
Now, a quick shout out to your son, Justin, who put me in contact with you about something that happened back in the 1960s. Would you like to start at the beginning, please, ma'am?
Yeah, sure. Yes, yeah, so actually, I was trying to think of the year, and it was either 1964 or 1965. I was trying to sort of get different things in my mind in place, but it was a bit tricky. So anyway, it was either of those years, and the month was June. That's when who was to become my husband, obviously he was just my boyfriend then, we decided we'd like to go to Cornwall on holiday, and we headed to Tintagel, which is a lovely place. And we were there and we did a few sort of outings here and there. And then on one particular morning, I believe actually it was a Sunday morning, we thought we'd have a trip to Launceston, which is, I don't know, I think it might be about 20 miles away or so. I think there was a castle or something my husband wanted to see. There was something historic anyway that he wanted to have a look at. So I think we left probably about 9 o'clock in the morning. We took an A road, so a very nice sort of fairly straight road that went from Tintagel to Launceston. The road was extremely quiet. We barely came across any other traffic in either direction. And so we were going along. The weather was fine. It wasn't overcast or anything like that. It was quite nice, bright weather. And on one side of the road was very, very thick, dense sort of forestry commission trees. So, you know, not like just an ordinary woodland, very sort of densely sort of planted. And on the other side of the road, there was a sort of an old, quite low, long stone wall. But at the time, we were in a bubble car, a very bright yellow bubble car. So it's in that position, we certainly couldn't see over that wall, even though it was quite low. And along also, I'm not sure whether they were at the front or the back of the wall, were telegraph poles, situated at, you know, so different distances from each other. So that was sort of the scene. And so we were coming along a very straight bit, no curves or anything. And about, thought about this, and it probably was, going by my own house and garden and sort of rough sort of size, probably the road probably was about, I don't know, 30 foot wide. And about 150 feet thereabouts in front of us, as we were driving, emerging from this dense woodland, came this object. As we saw part of it, it moved, sort of glided across. It was about a dark colour. I don't know what to say, whether it was even at the time, I remember when we talked about it, we don't know whether it was a dark brown or black. It was just very, very dark in colour. It moved across the road, taking up at one point, as it crossed, the whole width of the road. It passed under the actual wire of the telegraph poles. They're just those old-fashioned wooden telegraph poles. So not high, but not really, really ever so high. And low to the ground as well. And it went very quietly, just moved across. And we were, the shape of it was like a rugby ball sort of shape. Had no distinguishing features that we could really, you know, notice at all. And that was it. It went over. I actually said to John at the time, I said, oh, come on, let's stop. And so we could get out and look over that wall. But unfortunately, he just didn't, he didn't want to do that at all. He put his foot down and we sort of moved at speed away. But we would have seen, because on that side, on the other, where the stone wall was, that was Bodmin Moor. And that dipped down, so that was like a sort of went into a sort of bit of a valley, and that would have been a huge area, of course, as the moor is, and we would have had a really good view, obviously, of anything that we'd seen going across. But yes, that really was the incident that happened at the time. I did actually write it down. Everything between us, we sort of wrote down of what we could remember. Yes. So nothing, there was no sort of, we were shocked. I mean, that's really the word. You try to figure out, you're looking at something, you can make head nor tail of the fact that not only has it emerged from this dense sort of forest, but it's not very far from the road. You know, it's only a bit up, and it's actually going underneath wires, telegraph wires. So it was very, very, well, just surreal, really, I suppose. I mean, that's the word that gets used a lot, but that's what it is. That's the very right description. And I think, actually, John had heard, because he was always listening to the news, that I think on that same day, or certainly the day after, but not in the daytime, because remember, this was full daytime, some police had chased something in their car. This was up in the, this was sort of, I think, more in the evening. It was in the sky. It wasn't sort of low down. So, yeah. So that's more or less it, Nick, really. That's, you know, but there was no strange feeling or anything in that sense. There was no sort of just shock at what we'd seen. Just couldn't believe what it was and tried to make sense of it. But we just couldn't. We couldn't make sense of it at all.
Interesting. That must have been quite a shock seeing that.
Yes, it was, because it was just how low it was and how big it was. And it just was soundless. It just was couldn't hear anything at all. And it just moved in a very sort of regal way, just across, you know. It wasn't so, well, I think it in total, I would say it was about 3 seconds, which doesn't sound long, but it's with the one Mississippi bit, yeah, going, coming out and going across and disappearing. It's yeah, and I must say, over the years when I've checked different things, I've never actually seen anyone give it anything similar to that ever. I mean, I don't know, because when you look at different, or when I've read about different sightings people have had, I know what we saw, as I say, was a rugby ball shape, but of course something can be, you can turn it around and it's a different shape, isn't it? You know, people can see cigar shapes and yet it's not that at all. It's something more, you know, more oval in shape when it changes direction. So I don't know. What we saw was rugby ball shape, but who knows what it really was, you know? But yes, I can see it still very clearly in my mind's eye. It's like a photograph that you can just, you know, pull up and see everything, the whole scene quite clearly. Yeah. Yes.
So yeah, so quite like an oval shape.
Yes, I suppose you'd say that. A sort of slightly flattened oval, yes. Yeah. No, not flattened really. No, oval shape. It was that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And yeah. I'd imagine it must have shadowed your little yellow beetle.
Well, as I say, it was about 150 feet away from us. And so as we were coming along, approximately that, which is what, about 50 metres? Yeah. But it being so big, of course, I suppose like looking suddenly at a great big lorry coming out of a big forest, you know, it just sort of did look and see if we could see anything similar that people had seen. But, you know, and I know that Bodmin Moor at the time, or for quite a number of years actually afterwards, there used to be sightings of different stuff, but never saw anything really that, or described anything that sounded like what we'd seen.
So that it would have come from your left. Would have come from your left.
No, came from the right. No, came from the right. The forest was on the right hand side, and it wasn't a forest that was set back at all from the road. It was, you know, there was the forest. There was a little, very small, perhaps grassy bit, and then there was the road. So it, and likewise the stone wall on the other side. There was just the wall, and then a little bit of grass, and then the road. So the road was, you know, taking up that whole width, really. Yes, and it just, and how could it have come out of that? You know, trees are so close together. I mean, that really baffled us. We couldn't make that out at all because we were obviously on holiday for a couple of weeks. I think at a later date we took that road again. And of course, you know, we're looking more closely now at the actual forest, and it was just dense. How nothing big could really come out of that. It was, you know, that was weird. And so precisely going under, I mean, a big object to go under a telegraph wires and not touch the ground. It wasn't touching the ground at all, but not far up from the ground, only a few feet.
I mean, yeah, what could have been? I mean, I guess in a farmer's tractor was definitely out of it because, they don't hover across the road.
No, we saw plenty of those, plenty of tractors and other sort of things. And this was back in the 60s. So the roads then were much quieter. And there wasn't, you know, you didn't see quite, certainly in somewhere like Cornwall and that part of Cornwall, North Cornwall. So you didn't see really any heavy vehicles at all. No, this wasn't a vehicle. This was an object, an unidentified object. Couldn't be identified.
Well,
it's dark.
That type shape is something that's reported, you know, quite a lot, believe it or not.
Yeah, the shape, yes. But would it have been looked different from another angle? But I wondered later.
This is it, yeah, this is it. Egg-shaped objects, you get that. I get that quite a lot. And there's a lot of ones from the 70s and 80s. That pop up now and again from that kind of area in Wales. And so I've had quite a few of them.
Yes, we used to go on holiday there too, but we didn't see anything there. No, that was really the only very, very and startling sort of episode that I've ever had. Yeah. But yes, to that degree, I've had lesser ones, but nothing like that. As I say, it just keeps a picture in my mind, you know, just to recall.
Yeah, when you see something like that, even though it was so, you know, quite a while ago now, and it's still so clear, clear in your memory.
Yeah, I can see it very, very clearly, the whole setting, But I don't know. Here we are. It's one of those, you know, unexplained things, isn't it?
I wonder if you would, if the car had been stopped and you had the chance to look over that wall.
Yes, well, yes, that's what I want to do. Even though I was a bit scared, there's something overwhelming curiosity, I suppose. So as I say, John, you know, my husband, who well became my husband, he was frightened about it, and he just didn't want to stop. Perhaps he thought, you know, they might take us away. I don't know. Because remember, this was in the days of, the American couple, Betty and Barney, who were on their journey over the Rocky Mountains, got abducted. So I don't know whether that was in the 60s. So I don't know whether he was thinking of something like that. But anyway, we didn't. It's a shame because we would have had a fantastic view of it, over those moors. But there we go. That never happened.
Absolutely. See, sometimes things are best left the way they are. And, you know.
I suppose they are.
and you're left with this memory of some unexplained occurrence.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. Will these things ever be explained, really?
Hopefully.
Who knows? Perhaps they will, bit by bit.
Well, the reports come in daily. I get contacted by so many people that have had strange experiences like this. So not just about UFOs, but, you know, all types.
Yeah. Oh, what a marvellous job you do then, don't you? You must enjoy this.
I do enjoy it. It's a very busy job, you could imagine. But yeah, it's a widely listened to show. You know, we listen to it all over the world.
Oh, well, I'll have to start listening to it now.
We don't just do UFOs. You know, we
do all sorts.
We do everything from the paranormal to, you know, we have some instances of the occult and out of body experiences. Anything that's strange and unexplained, we have on here.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, I'll bear that in mind on my list.
Wonderful, Diana. Thank you for sharing that today.
Okay, thank you.
I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Yeah, thank you very much. Take care, Nick.
You take care and enjoy your day.
Yeah, I will. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye for now.
Bye.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
Hello, G-Man. Welcome to the podcast.
I want to thank you very much for having me on the show. A pleasure. And it'll be my first time telling my story in concise order. So my story actually starts when I was 3 years old. I was adopted orphanage in Illinois. And I went through a great deal of abuse. So there was this one there who used to punch me in the nose every day, you know, so I was kind of down abuse at a very early age. And then I was adopted by these people who were divorced twice before and who both had severe drinking problems. And so it was kind of a dicey childhood. But I was abducted when I was 5. I was asleep one night, and this is in northern Ohio, a quarter mile from Lake Erie. I remember laying in bed and I saw this red light flashing in my room off the wall through the window. There were two east windows about 6 feet apart and a south window that was smaller than the other two. And it was through that south window that I saw the red light flashing up against the wall. And I remember sitting up, and the next thing I know, boom, I am on the ship. I am inside. I'm standing there, and I'm looking at a gray. And he was about much taller than me. So I was like 5 years old. He must have been about 4 or 4.5, 5 feet. And I looked behind him, and there was a guy there looking out a window. And when I got on there and I was in front of that gray, all of a sudden I started feeling the most intense feeling of love starting at my feet. And it was warm. It was a warm feeling that you could feel going up or so and through your arms and then to the top of your head. It happened just like that. I mean, I feel when it came, and I definitely could feel it. So the guy goes, I don't remember if he actually said the words or if he was speaking in my mind, but I heard him say, do you want to meet your brother? I didn't know I had a brother. And so he goes, he makes the left down this hallway, and all the doorways were rounded at the top to the bottom, almost like an arch. And when he went to the left, I looked toward the right, and I saw this really, really large gray. I mean, he must have been 7 or 8 foot tall. I thought it was like a dummy at first, but I saw his eyes blinking, and so I just figured he was like the older brother or the bigger one of this little grays. But the gray comes back in, and he's holding baby in his arms, which is like 6 to 8 months old, not a big baby. And I remember looking at him, and he had like platinum hair. And I don't have platinum hair. He's got these really light blue eyes. And I have blue eyes too, but not like that color. And I remember touching his foot. And then the gray said, well, it's time for you to go back. And we'll see each other again. And so as I was exiting the ship, and I don't remember floating from my room to the ship. It was just like one quick motion for me. And just before I was exiting, I saw a flashback of the first time I was abducted. I remember seeing it through the very far eastern window. And it was over our street as opposed to being over in the back of our yard where I saw the red light and all that. So it was kind of weird. I was wearing different pajamas in that flashback that I saw, different pajamas, and I saw it through a totally different angle. And so the abduction itself, or abductions, and within a few days, I started to get really bad dreams. I mean, really bad, where you could see, like, I saw the planet Earth, and I saw, the first time I saw, it was like a movie reel, and it was like a mushroom cloud here, you know, like toward the eastern seaboard. And then there was another mushroom cloud that went up and more toward Alaska. And then the third one was more like toward California. And that was kind of weird. But then they started getting worse. The dreams kept being added onto. You know, like I was seeing changes in real time in my dream. So the next, saw like 5 or 6 mushroom clouds all over the planet. And then instead of seeing mushroom clouds, actually saw the destruction it was making. I saw the people, the children, the women, blown up alive and melted. And I was seeing those things vividly. I would wake up in a cold sweat. I would start screaming out loud. It was so bad. The dreams were affecting me so bad at night that they actually had to call the doctor to make a house call. And that's something that hasn't been done in a long time. But this guy came there. He gave me a shot. I fell asleep. And it was like right after that, he suggested I go talk to Celeste. So I did. But I found out the more I tried talking about my abduction, the crazier they thought I was. So I didn't try to pursue that avenue. And after about a few months of like maybe up to 6 months, I stopped getting those dreams. Fast forward, I'm now in like second or third grade in elementary school. And the teacher one day said, you know, here's a task for you guys, an assignment. I want you to write to a very famous person, and I want you to get the reply, and we'll read it in class. And when she gave us that, it was like April of 1962. And unfortunately, I didn't get the reply letter. I mailed the letter to President John F. Kennedy, JFK. And I told him about my abduction. And as well as I could recollect what the ship looked like, I drew a picture. It more or less looked like the Jetsons vehicle from the cartoon, the Jetsons. So I didn't get a reply until like mid-July, and school was well over for the year by then. And I'm on our front porch, and I see these two guys in suits, one guy in a brown guy in a gray suit, and they're walking down our street. And for some reason, they parked the car like, I don't know, like maybe a half a block from my house, which was the last house on a dead end street. And they came walking up to the door, and they asked for me, and I said, and they handed me the reply. And it said in the letter, it said that I would make a great scientist for the government one day, and or I could go to work for the FBI. So the two FBI agents, they were trying to grill me on exactly what I saw and everything. And I'm not going to tell them, Jack. So they made sure to tell my parents before they left that I shouldn't be bothering the president, that he's a very busy man, which really got my butt kicked when the two FBI agents left. My butt was, I think I ended up having to go to bed without dinner that night. But so time goes on. A few years later, I'm going to middle school then. So it's like maybe 4 or 5 years later. The principal came by with a note for me. And he said, I want you to attend this special class to see if you go to get a better education. And so I went to that meeting, the testing area, and the whole room with what I consider to be brainiacs. I considered myself just to be average student at best. And in that room, was filled with about 15 of the smartest kids I thought were at the school. And I sat down, and all of a sudden the door opened and these two guys walked in. It was those two FBI agents that got my butt kicked years earlier. I wasn't going to forget what they looked like. The one, and they were still wearing the same colored suits too. One guy wore a brown suit. He went and sat at the teacher's desk. The other guy went all the way to the far window, and he was looking at the window, looking outside for what, I don't know. But I said, aren't you two guys with the government? And the guy goes, no, we're with the county. And I go, right. You know, so they had all these tests laid out for us that we were supposed to take. And I'm staring at the one guy who's at the window. I'm staring at his back, trying to remember everything about him that I could. And he says to me, without turning around, take your test. Keep your eyes on your test and take your test. And he says my name. And I'm like, wow, that was pretty good. He didn't even look at me. So I ended up just flubbing the test. I didn't like the whole scene. I didn't like those two guys. And so I think I was the first one done, and all I did was check boxes all the way down. I didn't even read the questions. So that was that. And then it turns out a couple of years later, my dad used to like to go to the bar on Saturday afternoons. And this one day he decided to drop me off at where they were having a UFO meeting. So I walk in there and I'm listening to everybody's stories. I'm listening to the speaker. And I look to the side and there's the FBI agent in the brown. And he goes, "Don't you know we watch these people in places like this?" I was really naive at the time. I said, "Why? It's no big deal. It's just UFOs." So I thought that was really strange. And then it was like after I graduated from high school, a few months later, after I graduated, I get this weird phone call. It's a guy who won't tell me who he is, won't tell me who he's connected with, but he wants me to be part of a focus group in the very eastern edge of New York. But first, I would have to go to Connecticut for a couple weeks. There was no money involved. It was like over 1,000 miles away for me to drive. And if I'm not being paid to do the focus group, then I have to get a job to survive. And the whole deal just reeked to me. It reeked really like something was going on. And my intuition was telling me just to tell them no. You know, I said, "What am I supposed to tell my parents?" You know? And he goes, "Just leave." So a couple months later, he comes back. And I'm really short and aggressive with him this time. He is first name, but he won't tell me anything. He said it's kind of a spiritual focus group, right? And I didn't think it was that at all. I didn't believe him. You know, I believed I was being set up for something that, you know, involved the government. So I had one more sighting after that phone call, and that was in North Ridgeville, Ohio, in 1971. And people can actually look it up. It's online, the sighting in North Ridgeville, 1971. It was really low clouds. I mean, the clouds, it was dark at night. It was about 8 or 9 o'clock. It was closer to 9. And clouds were just so thick. But off in the distance, up in the sky, you saw these lights, really strange lights. And to my immediate left, you know, maybe about 30 feet away, is a telephone pole. And just above that, like 10 foot, there was like an opening in the cloud. And something moved across that opening. And it didn't move. And it had slats on the bottom of it, like a military vehicle, but it wasn't military. Unless military back in those days had electromagnetic vehicles. And one more time, I saw the FBI agent. And that was when I decided to go see The Exorcist. My adopted mom was with me, and I looked to my right, behind me a few people, these guys, and they were wearing the same suits. And I'm like, don't these guys ever change? I mean, what's up with that anyway? You know? So that was it, nothing after that. An FBI agent moved across the street from my, but that was about it. So that is my story, except I've been getting a couple of those dreams again. The mushroom cloud one and the explosion. And they're really screwed up dreams. They're really, really bad. When, you know, they're so realistic. You can smell people's flesh burning. You know, really, really gross. And scared the total crap out of me. My great-grandmother, who is clairvoyant, she said, now is young, that gave me some kind of ability. Now, won't say I'm psychic or anything like that, but very strong intuition. Now, that's my story, Nick.
That's great, G-Man. The FBI obviously had some interest in you for, you know, being in your life for so long.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they obviously had something out for me, you know. But the way I think about it is, like, they were setting me up for a program that had something to do with really, really physical and sexual abuse and violence involved. You know, that happened to me in the orphanage. That happened all through while I was living with the adopted parents. Another thing, too, that's really weird is that I tried to find out who my real parents were. So I called Ohio Adoption, and the lady goes, those files are sealed. And I said, what if I needed information for help to find out family health? And I said, what if I went to a court and got a judge to undo it? It doesn't matter. You can go to the highest court and they'll never be able to open those files. So.
But you think all this could have possibly been connected to some kind of program?
Yes, I like Montauk. Because it was about the same time. Montauk is the very eastern edge of New York.
That's right. Dreams of the Mushroom Clouds and the destruction lasted for several years. Do you recall having any other encounters after your initial ones as a child?
I sometimes have premonitions, like of my grandfather dying, my adopted grandfather. It seemed like my life changed, and I changed as a person after those first two abductions. I mean, I remember very little of the abductions itself. You know, I remember being on the ship. I remember seeing the grays. I remember seeing the baby. I remember the smells. It smelled really, really off, you know, really bad, like stomach, kind of really sickening. I had one a few months ago. I ended up telling Linda Moulton, she wants me to keep her updated if I have any more. I saw one going off in the Middle East. It's imprinted in my mind. So, yeah, that's the one I saw. But I really don't want to get any more dreams like that. I don't want to know. I mean, if what I know can help save people, all is good. And it didn't really give me a time frame. But the last time when I was little and I saw the dream, the very last dream, had three numbers. A 2, a 0, and a 5. There was one number missing if it was supposed to give me a time frame, you know, so that's all I remember from now.
Scary stuff. Scary stuff.
Like,
especially with everything going on in the world at the moment.
Yeah, I don't need the FBI or Mossad showing up at my door to ask me in more detail about my dream. I'll tell them if I have to. But
do you remember having any strange visits as an adult?
No, but I met some really weird people in Washington, D.C. Because I lived there for a few years. And so I became kind of known to the intel community. Believe it or not, and this is going to sound weird, but you want to know where you can go find some of the brightest minds in DARPA and places like that are Star Trek conventions. God.
That's pretty interesting.
Because I met a bunch of them at a Star Trek convention in D.C. in 1980.
Do you think that the abductions that you remember as a child, do you think they continued on throughout your adult life?
I didn't really live a pious life. I lived a rebel life, working with musicians and bands and touring. So, you know, I don't think I was probably too radical for them to want to stick me in Montauk or the Brookings Institute or places like that. I mean, I was just too much of a rebel.
You know, I hear a lot from guests that they recall being involved in projects and having all these strange encounters with people in suits. I wonder how much this went on and how many people and how many children were involved in these projects.
I would say probably 1 million or more. There were 8 major centers besides Montauk that all performed the same kind of abuse and sexual magic. And it was, the whole thing was run by an ex-Nazi.
as much as some of this is very difficult to comprehend, it is something which happened and it is something which is documented to have gone on. And it's pretty scary the effect this stuff can actually have on people, especially as a child.
Yeah, it kind of screwed me up, but I didn't think they had any ulterior evil motives involved. You know, I didn't get that kind of vibe at all. But feeling that strong feeling of warmth and love travel up your body is awesome. But the bad part of that is when you leave the ship, that slowly dissipates all through your body. And by the time I'm on my bed, it's gone. That feeling of love.
You said they showed you your brother.
Yeah.
Do you think you've ever met him again?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I hope I do. Him again. It wouldn't kill me if I didn't. You know what I mean? If they wanted me to know, if he wanted me to know, he would have contacted me and just said, hey, this is what's up.
You never felt any fear when you met these beings?
No, just love. Nothing evil, just love.
You had a UFO sighting as well.
Yes.
Do you think that was maybe connected with your earlier experiences?
Didn't feel like it. Didn't feel like it at all. And it was a different kind of ship altogether.
Great stuff. Okay. G-Man, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Thank you, Nick. I really appreciate your time and your effort. You do an excellent job.
It was our pleasure having you on today, okay? Take care, and we will speak soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye for now. That is all for this episode. Keep updated and connected with the show on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Diana and G-Man for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.